Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. This is Greg Hahn, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. And with me is Adam Kunz, Head of Trading Portfolio Management. Adam, good morning.
I'm back.
Adam took time off last week. Wow. So we are, believe it or not, past the halfway point in October. And going into the end of the year now, this goes fast. So one of our themes as we work through portfolio structure with financial advisors and with our clients is to make sure that we got portfolios nailed down now. And we probably, we estimate we've got about 4 weeks to do this before liquidity starts to really become a factor in moving the market around, especially with more esoteric type securities like structured securities. And we'll talk about what's going on in the structured securities market here in a second. But let's kind of lay a foundation, Adam, for a context of where we're at and heading into 2021, because we're going to need to start talking about our outlook for 2021 here pretty soon. But there's two fundamental tenets that are fueling the investor, and frankly, it's investor optimism if you look at equity prices, but really investor, what's driving the investor right now. And first is that we're closer to the election, which I know sounds kind of obvious, but we literally have, 15 days left till the election. But what that means is we're closer to removing the uncertainty around who will be president, which party will control Congress, whose agenda we're going to follow. And so I think that's actually a positive. Removing that uncertainty for the market is going to be a positive. And I think that the driver there is going to be fiscal stimulus, regardless of tax policy or regulatory policy or anything like that. It's really what can Congress do for fiscal stimulus. The second truth that is driving investor behavior is that we're closer to the end of the pandemic than we are to the beginning of it. And I think there's a general consensus of there's a more knowledge around how to control the spread of the virus or contain the spread of the virus than shutting down the whole economy at large. Now, I say this cautiously because we're seeing spikes in COVID cases around the globe. So I don't take this at all lightly. But we should see a vaccine, at least one vaccine. It looks like Pfizer's could be ready by the end of the year. Yeah. There's a couple vaccines and treatments, including Lilly's therapy, that have been, and Johnson & Johnson, that have been halted because of illnesses during the phase three trial, but there is progress being made. And so as a way to control the virus, a way to control the spread of the virus that allows the parts of the economy that are closed to be more freely opened. We estimate that affects about $1 trillion of output, which takes our $20 trillion economy down to roughly 19 trillion. So when we accumulate all of this, and I think it was the budget, the CBO put out data for September 30th, the fiscal year end, the Congressional Budget Office reported that it was $3.1 trillion in fiscal deficit for this past year. Before the pandemic, we were looking at roughly $1 trillion in a projected deficit. So we weren't out of the woods by any stretch. But that is so significant. It goes, when you go back to when data was first being kept, Adam, it goes back to 1945, where 16.1% of the current budget is represented by the output. It's a percentage of total GDP. That is 16%. That's the largest number since 1945 when we were financing World War II. We're still halfway through it. Yeah. Next year is going to be another $2 trillion deficit. So, and that doesn't, by the way, account for the fiscal deficits of state and local governments that are also challenged. I think it's California, for example, has a state deficit of $54 billion. And you look at the cities around the country, major cities, including Chicago and New York, they have tremendous fiscal challenges. So that's going to be the theme for 2021, is how to navigate that. And that's what one of the things we're looking for in the fiscal stimulus package, because it's going to impact the municipal sector. So with that, let me pause. I'm going to turn it over to you, and then we're going to come back on China. I want to talk this morning about China.
Just a few kind of high-level things here. On the earnings side, last week was heavy on the banks. You kind of saw a divergence. There were a few banks that beat pretty well, and that was usually driven by trading. And then banks that didn't do so well, that was usually driven by declines in net interest margins. So Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan were the two winners, driven by trading. Trading for Goldman Sachs was up 29% year over year. So fixed income trading and new issuance has continued to be heavy through the year. That's falling off a cliff going into the end of the year, as Greg said, as liquidity goes away.
Yeah, and something to watch, Adam, is that this is in a post-Glass-Steagall environment now, where when the repeal of Glass-Steagall in 1999 removed the barriers for banks to do other businesses, including asset management, insurance. And so what we're seeing is an evolution in the business model of what a bank is, and asset management is becoming a bigger part of some banks, yep, the choice that they're making. And as you mentioned, fixed income trading, but also a big part. The problem with fixed income trading is it's so cyclical.
Yeah, very volatile.
And banks, management doesn't like that. So, but it's not just making loans, gathering deposits and making loans.
No, you're spot on. Goldman Sachs asset management was up 71% year over year. To your point, that's a big growth driver for some of these.
Do you have BlackRock? Did you see BlackRock?
I get BlackRock.
So they're up 22%. Profits were up 22%. Now, BlackRock's not a bank. It's just an asset management firm that has both active and passive mutual fund and ETF strategies, but $7.8 trillion in assets. That's over a third of the U.S. economy.
Right.
One company. That's amazing. Uh-huh. So that's...
Wells Fargo and Bank of America were the two losers on the week. Net interest margins for both were down roughly 20%. And you saw loan loss provisions tick up for both banks. So like I said, two different stories in the banking sector. United Health on the in the healthcare, they did beat. Revenue was actually up 8% year over year. And that was largely driven by their data analytics Optum unit. So a good quarter for United Health, and that's a name that I think we like going into the election. So that was it on earnings. On the actual markets, S&P was up again. So for the last month, the S&P is up 5% now, where the NASDAQ is up 8%. Mm-hmm. So you're still seeing the NASDAQ show strength, but the Russell 2000 or small caps are outperforming the S&P 500 over the last month. So you are seeing some shifts around as people are trying to find value in the markets. We actually, this last week in our models, increased our small cap exposure, taking down some of our sector exposure and also taking down just the broad basis and adding to small cap. And this was just a first move. I think we'll look to add more and more depending on what the markets are doing.
Yeah, and one of our themes has been how to, I don't want to use the word play, but how to invest a portfolio and align it to a recovery so that we're not just playing this concentrated tech exposure in the broad market indices. Any thoughts on going into the end of the year on how best investors should structure portfolios to start to align for a recovery, or do you still think it's too soon?
So you hit on this a ton, is really the driver of some of the smaller companies going to be an increase in credit flow. And so what you've seen over the last few weeks is banks begin to soften their lending standards. We haven't seen the numbers flow through actual loans, but that should lead to better lending. And if that happens, I think and we get more stimulus, which is largely expected, I think you'll see some of these smaller cap companies do better. I think there's an obvious stimulus package coming for airlines, and I think that will that'll help prop up them. But I think there's definitely we've added to the equal weight ETF. I think that is a great way to play that large cap space, but spreading out your bets. We continue to talk about the you know, the concentration risk in the top five.
Yeah.
And I just want to reiterate that, you know, five companies don't make up the economy. I was doing some work over the weekend, and the number of employees by the top five companies is 1.3 million people. So less than 1% of the 155 million employed Americans, yet that makes up 23% of the S&P 500. So,
wow,
you know, a big difference there in what the market's doing versus what the economy is doing.
Let's shift to the credit markets here a second. So low interest rates have a way of distorting valuations in asset prices. So we see that in the equity market. That's an argument for high equity valuations, as we're discounting future cash flows at ultra low interest rates. It also has an impact in commercial real estate. So I don't know if you got a chance to read the Wall Street Journal this morning, but there's an article on the commercial real estate market in New York, which we are very close to. And the challenges that New York office, Midtown Manhattan especially, is facing because employees aren't going into the office, they're working remotely. And companies are really rationalizing these large real estate footprints, saying, do we really need it? If we have employees that can work effectively from home, we can cut expenses. And so the challenges in the commercial mortgage-backed security markets, the CMBS market, what's amazing is what we've looked at through this quarter is really the prices have held up in CMBS really well. However, the underlying collateral continues to deteriorate. Yeah. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so I don't think it's surprising that in the CMBS world, if there's a lot of retail or lodging in the deal, those are, you know, trading very cheaply. But I'm very surprised by how investors are looking past office, and as you're talking about, that there's still a risk there.
Yeah.
And when we're looking at CMBS that is, you know, made up of 40% office, those are still trading. I mean, we're talking, you know, A-rated trading with a 3%, maybe even with a 2% handle, versus something that has a little bit more retail.
Yeah.
Is going to be trading with a 4 or 5%. When you look at the underlying loans, like you said, there's tons of office buildings on the watch list of these deals. So there is stress.
So we've been out of REITs. Mm-hmm. In all of our models, we don't use REITs. In our active strategies, we have either underweight or totally eliminated REITs. When's the point that we start to look at it and say, let's start building a position in the REIT industry?
Well, it's the same thing we've talked about in several other sectors, is the REIT sector really got morphed over this past year, because if you were a technology, if you were like a server type REIT where you were a warehouse for servers, those performed really well, up 20 and 30%. So they grew in the index, and then your traditional office type REITs have shrunk as a part of the index. So the problem I have really is not necessarily just involved in REITs, it's how do you get involved? Because if you just go out and buy the REIT sector, you're really buying a predominantly technology-based, overvalued piece of the market. So I guess to answer your question in two ways, you got to look at what you're investing in. And secondly, I think it's much like investing in small cap. You know, there's a point where this turns, there's a point where there's support. And so, yeah, I would say we're approaching that soon.
And then also in credit, high yields had a good quarter so far.
Great quarter. Spreads have tightened over 80 basis points. I did want to highlight this week in the levered loan market and high yield is that JP Morgan came out with a report last week that recovery rates are really, really low through this cycle. So high yield recovery rates have only been 17%.
Mm-hmm.
And first lien levered loan is only 47%. So considerably lower than even the financial crisis. Now it's largely driven by energy and retail that are basically just going to zero, with no real assets, but something worth watching.
Yeah, that's going to play out next year too. Is how that levered loan market holds up.
Yeah, delinquencies and bankruptcies are still picking up in levered loan.
Any comments on new issuance coming into the end of the year?
So in corporate new issuance, I mean, it's really drying up. But what you're seeing is a rush in the structured security, as volatility is fairly muted. And because there isn't all this corporate issuance, you're seeing CLOs come to market, CMBS come to market. And there's even an aircraft ABS coming this week, which is, you know, that's a tough market. So what you're seeing is before the liquidity dries up here going into Thanksgiving, you're seeing a rush in structure.
And I don't want to gloss over this. It's an important topic, and we probably should pick this up next week, but the municipal market is the challenges that munis are going to face from a credit standpoint next year in the absence of any fiscal stimulus, meaningful fiscal stimulus designed to address it. It's going to get complicated. So you got cities that are supporting stadiums and convention centers that are supported by hospitality taxes that rely on people going to restaurants and hotels, and the math doesn't work. And so some of this stuff, by the way, is insured. So looking at the credit quality of the monoline insurance companies, we're going to see more stress in that area.
And on the higher ed side, some data came out over the weekend. So new enrollments are down 6% broadly in higher education, but more significantly, the underlying number was that so new student enrollment was down 20%. Yeah. So that's a larger issue, is that these students just don't go to college at all. Enrollment's going to start to go down considerably faster.
Yep.
Community colleges were even worse. So yeah, there's in the municipal market on the higher ed side, that's an issue as well.
All right, let's talk about something. Let's conclude on a bright note here, China. So the China, I don't know if you saw this, but China's GDP, I think was, what was it,
4.9?
Yeah, it was a big number, but not as big as what they expected. Sure. But the whole point is that the expected growth for China this year is actually going to be close to 2%. Mm-hmm. Now, you look at that and say, well, big deal. But that's in the context of the United States down 4.3, Europe down 8.3, Japan down 5.3. So China is actually going to post positive growth in 2020 during the pandemic in spite of the economy shutdown. So we've maintained that over the next 10 years, this is going to be a contest, basically, a virtual contest between central state-controlled capitalism, which is China, versus free market Western-style capitalism, which is, we see this United States and Europe and count Japan in that. So because it's state-supported, Japan moved very quickly during the pandemic to provide low-interest loans and lower interest rates and really stimulate the way that it does, stimulate its economy. So we can argue or debate whether the numbers are accurate or not, but I think the trend is the trend in that China is showing positive growth in a year, 2020, that's challenging. And then forward-looking numbers, 2021, we do, the IMF put out numbers. They expect to see a rebound just from a world output to increase by 5.2%. The U.S. is going to lag that. I think the estimate for the U.S. is closer to 3%, but you'll see China close again back to 8%. Yeah. And so that's going to be interesting. So one of the things we're doing in our strategies is looking at how to isolate China out of emerging markets. So we're not just burying it in the emerging market exposure, but really pulling it out as a separate investable asset class and treating it alongside the developed countries. And then having emerged, so we literally would have three sleeves, developed countries, China, and then emerging. So we have, with that, why don't we wrap it up? We went a little bit long today, Adam, but thanks for chiming in.
Yeah.
And guys, we'll talk to you during the week. Thank you.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.